Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for December 15th, 2008, and on this episode we have an interview with Rudy Hogenmiller from Light Opera Works. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready and let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is someone who's been on my list for a long time, one of the people in Chicago I admire. His name is Rudy Hogenmiller, and he is the artistic director at Light Opera Works. Hello, Rudy.
Hi, Tom. Good to see you.
Great. Nice seeing you. Tell us about Music Man that you have coming up, opening on December 26th at Kahn Auditorium.
Well, yes, it is our holiday show, and it's, you know, one of the great American classics. We have Mr. Larry Adams starring as the Music Man, and Larry's been doing several shows for me, actually, since I've been at Light Opera Works. This is my fifth season, and or the end of my fourth, I guess, probably. But anyway, we're in rehearsals for the show. We're getting ready to start tech soon. So we're having a great time. It's just a wonderful piece of theater to be working on.
Well, tell us in a little more in detail about the Music Man, because one of the specialties the Light Opera does that I respect the most is you guys do flat-out full productions.
Right. We really we approach these classic Broadway musicals just like we do the operettas, and we're trying to present them in the scale and the scope as the authors originally intended them to be seen. So we're not cutting anything. We're not rewriting anything. We're not really reinventing it. You know, we're not. It's not the Music Man set in 1950. It's set in 1912.
Like, well, and you use 29 musicians, so you have the big sound. And
exactly.
You use all the original orchestrations too,
right.
And with all the segue music.
Right. All the and it's one of those old shows where you have in the theater we call it a lot of in-one scenes where. There's a drop that will come in, and there's crossover scenes or very small short scenes that happen while a set change is happening on the stage, and a bigger set change is happening. And a lot of those in-one scenes traditionally, maybe not traditionally, but in a lot of people cut those. But we do them all. And
those are cute. And
they are fun.
And they reinforce the music in your head, as do the overtures, which some of them cut.
Exactly, and sometimes there's a lot of really charming music and charming dialogue in those small little scenes that you know, people have never heard before. We experienced that when we did both South Pacific and Sound of Music. You know, people were like, oh my God, I've never even seen those scenes in the show.
Well, plus both of those shows, just to give an idea of what Light Opera does, there were cut songs that most of the dinner playhouses and some of them cut because they think it's too long.
Right.
And you guys include all those in.
Right. Or, you know, they might cut them because they just don't have the manpower. You know, we have a full company, so we've got a big chorus and stuff. I mean, most of our shows have choruses of, you know, anywhere from like around 24 and just in the chorus. And we don't have people doubling in principal roles. We have all the principal roles are played by, you know, the single actors. People aren't doubling in other parts.
So that's quite a niche. But let's get back to Music Man, because it's one of my favorites. I can't wait to see Larry Adams in it, because it's one of the roles that just fits him perfect.
Right. He. I mean, and like I said, Larry's done several shows for me, and actually, you know, he even came to me and was, you know, talking to me and said, you know, he pitched the show to me for a vehicle for him to do. And which is, you know, fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And,
oh, no.
You know, and like I said, he's one of our favorites. So it's nice to have Larry do something. It's nice to have Larry get a chance to do something he wants to do. He has done the show before, but there again, never on this scale or scope. So, and Larry has a great appreciation for music and orchestras and all of that. So,
well, he's a terrific comic. He's a great actor and a big, strong voice.
Big, strong voice, right? And he's, He's a handsome guy, of course, and you know, he's dancing, he's kicking up his heels in the show, too.
So who else can we see in the cast?
Well, we'll see Miss Alicia Burnesh, who's playing Marion the Librarian, and Alicia is, she also has done a couple of shows for us. She's done the lead in Iolanthe, our operetta this year.
Okay.
And yes. She did the lead in Bittersweet last year, or 2 years ago, can't remember exactly, but she is actually from the opera world, I would say. She is an opera person, but, you know, so many of these opera singers had their roots in musical theater, too. They started doing musical theater, and then they went into opera.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I've been starting to cover opera, like at the Lyric, and I've noticed how you expected to see the fat lady singing, but they're they're actresses and actors, and they can do more than sing now.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. And so we're lucky to find somebody like Alicia who crosses over, you know, and Peter Vertigo is playing Mayor Shin, and
He's been around forever. Yeah, he's a good character.
And Joanne Mines playing Eulalie McKechnie Shin. Joanne has also been around for many years, and you know, it's just terrific having her in the show.
It's the full blast 29-piece orchestra, which that's begs that one question that people ask me is why with these big lavish productions that you guys are limited to, you know, 6, 8, 10 performances in some of them.
Right. Well, they are big and they're expensive, and you know, we're a non-for-profit company, so you know, we ticket sales are very important, but we have a lot of funding too, and we are using Khan Auditorium at Northwestern Campus, which is only available to us when they're not using it. So
so that's certainly a limit for a long run.
That is a certain bit of a limit. Our next season, we're going to be, I know you mentioned we might want to talk about our next season, but this is the time or not, but next year we are doing My Fair Lady, and we'll be planning 3 weekends on that show.
Great.
So
I can't wait, because, again, there's been some great versions of that scaled down. Mm-hmm. Court had one that was great, and Marriott and a few other places, but you guys are going to do it full blast.
I've done the show myself like 3 times, but I've never done the full version, you know.
That's got to be exciting.
Yeah, so that's probably a long show too.
Well, you know, that's part of your niche. Your Sound of Music was like almost 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. It probably was 2:45 or something, with intermission.
Close to it. You know? But you know, when the music is great and you're seeing the big costumes, and you know, it's what theater's really all about.
Sure. Hopefully, you get swept away and you don't even notice the time. You know.
Yeah, that's that. And I've seen 75-minute shows that are 4 hours too long. We all know what that's about. So that's one of the considerations of why the shorter runs: availability of your space, the cost of your orchestra. I mean, you use all union people.
Right. Our orchestra is a union orchestra. We rent our costumes. We don't really build all of our costumes. So there's rental costs, and those things are, and as you can imagine, you know, the economy, everything is more and more expensive all the time. And what else? It's a catch-22, you know, a limited run. And so if we had more subscribers, we could run longer, but it's hard to get more.
Well, it's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast interview with you early, because I really believe in the work and that you guys have done through the years. Really, no one else in the Midwest does what you do.
Yeah, probably not really on this scale, you know. And I think we have a good subscription base, and we're really grateful to our subscribers. Of course, we'd always love to have more. And
you need more younger, as all theater does. You need to get some of the younger people, and that's kind of what one of our missions is to, hey, folks, here's a chance to see. I took a friend of mine to see Sound of Music. Sound of Music, a young actor in town in his 20s. He was blown away. He says, I did not realize that's how they're done, you know, with all the music and all the Richard Russell Bennett orchestrations and all
right.
And now he's addicted, you know, and I don't know if he's auditioned for it. I won't tell you his name, but probably has.
But we do a lot of, you know, we have a lot of special family matinees with discount prices during this holiday season, too, and for Music Man, and that's one of the reasons why we do it, too, so that people can bring the whole family and bring the young people. I think the kids are half price on certain performances.
Great. And go to your website at the Light Opera Works.
Right. Yeah, it's a great way to introduce people to
And it sets a standard in their mind of what musical theater is, because it isn't some of these little, not to mock them, but those little storefront shows. Those aren't really musical. They're a type.
Right.
But this is traditional classic musicals.
Right. Or, you know, there again, not to mock them or put them down, but in the round productions, things like that. I mean, it's a different game, you know. And so, I mean, I can't tell you how many people audition for me that are in shows that, you know, and if we're doing something like a Music Man, and, you know, maybe the only time they've ever seen it was in a non-professional in the round production somewhere. And that's what they thought it was, you know.
I hear that all the time.
Yeah,
the young actors. So this is a chance for everybody. So you guys are kind of holding the ground, and not only with musicals, but with the light operas you do, the Gilbert and Sullivans, and, mm-hmm. and some of the other.
Right. We've definitely been transitioning into more musical theater. I mean, the company was founded really on operetta, and we're still hanging on to that. Too. So we're trying to do it all, you know, in the world of musical theater, you know. But we're always trying to focus on the music, even whether it's an operetta or it's a Broadway musical. I mean, we are what we believe. We're picking things that are classic, that have beautiful music. We're not picking something, and there again, not to put it down, but we're not doing Grease or mm-hmm. something like that, you know.
It would be a shame to have 29 fabulous musicians doing some of the rock and roll, which is more simplistic type music.
Sure, yeah. So we're always, you know, using legitimate singers with legitimate voices, whether it's operetta or a Broadway musical.
I've always been amazed at how you've been able to find such great singers. Yeah, because you are limited on how many equity contracts you can have, mm-hmm. you know, due to budgets, and we understand that.
Sure.
But where do you find these non-equity? A lot of them are, I know, younger people who are, you know, learning their craft and getting their points and so forth, you know, to be
right.
equity.
Well, Chicago, you know, I mean, all the universities in Chicago all have musical theater departments now. It's
yes.
become quite a profitable business in the universities. So,
yeah, that's true. They weren't around when you and I were.
No, there was no such thing as a musical theater certificate, you know. But so I have a lot of, people in my show right now, Music Man, that are getting their majors in Columbia, you know, in musical theater. And so I've got a mixture of college kids in the chorus, and I have a mixture of opera people that are they don't do equity shows. They do opera.
But yeah, I guess opera's not equity.
No, it's not
equity.
It would be AGMA.
AGMA, okay.
And then I've got people that are sort of like professional community theater people that have done community theater for many years, but I call them professional because they're definitely good enough to be equity. It was their choice. You know, they had other careers, and they, you know.
Yeah, I've seen, there's a lot around Chicago that are dramatic actors, too.
Right.
And
I say,
why aren't you equity?
Yeah.
And they say, well, I make too much money. I don't need the benefits.
Right.
You know, and I have, you know, I make X amount, and so that, therefore, I can do theater because I love to do it. And I think that's legit.
Sure, exactly. Or like somebody like Peter Vertigo, who's, you know, retired now, but I think he had a construction business is my understanding. But he's a member of SAG and AFTRA because he's done film work all over for many years. And he never joined Equity because he had his business running. He couldn't do 8 shows a week, but he could do film and things like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So we have the real mixture of people.
Well, one of the things that we should bring out, too, is where there's dance, you guys do a fabulous job. I know your background is a lot in choreography. And,
right.
And
well,
you were,
I was
folks,
a dancer. That
and
was
you
my...
were one of the great dancers.
Thanks.
You still got to be back on stage one of these days, though.
Well, that was my background. That's how I started. And from dancing, went into doing choreography for many years. And then started doing directing, choreographing shows, which led to this. But we have some terrific dancing in Music Man. A friend of mine, his name is Kevin Belly, is choreographing Music Man. It's the first time working with Kevin. We're so glad to have him on board on this show. Kevin is artistic director at Circle Theater.
Yes, he is.
He's got his own theater and company he's doing. But I had never done Music Man before, and Kevin had done it several times and loved it. It was one of his favorite shows. So it's nice having people on your team that, you know the work.
Well, and you're to be congratulated for giving Kevin the opportunity to choreograph a show on a major scale, because he does some amazing work at Circle Theater. And I've always kid him. I said, I'd love to see you on a big stage. So we're good. We're going to get to see that.
Yeah, I think the Circle stage is, I don't know, what is it, maybe... I don't know. It's just so tiny, but it's amazing what he does there.
It does, yeah.
But compared to our stage, it's probably like a a 12th of the size or something.
Well, answer
or a tenth
this, because a lot of people have told me they think the not only the quality of actors and singers is better than ever, but I think the dancers, the kids coming up, are better than ever in terms of their, for their age and maybe for their experience.
Well, I mean, dancing is so popular. It's been so popular in, you know, for the last 20 years, you know, and, you know, you got Dancing with the Stars, and I mean, it's just a really popular thing. When I was starting, it was when Baryshnikov was just becoming a really, you know, really hot, hot person, and he certainly changed the dance world and made male dancers, you know, brought a lot of credibility to that. And yeah, there's a lot of dancers in Chicago there, again, because it's all part of these musical theater programs and that people are getting in the universities. They have dance classes they have to take. That's part of their curriculum. And but it's an ever-changing. It's an ever-changing commodity.
Well, but that's kind of close to your heart, right?
Well, yeah, it's definitely, you know, what I feel.
So, Music Man, let's give us the dates now. It opens on the 26th, day after Christmas, right?
Day after Christmas, okay. Right, and it runs until January 4th.
Okay, and, so, and there's matinees involved because it's
right.
a holiday show.
I don't have the exact playing schedule in my head.
You can go to the Light Opera Works. This is .org, I believe, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can really just go to www.lightoperaworks.com and you'll get it, too.
Okay, all right, good. Because, folks, you've got to see what real traditional Broadway musicals are about with the full blast music. Again,
and full sets and full costumes and, you know, beautiful lighting. And I mean, it's, you know, it's everything.
It's what theater was when I was growing up, and I was lucky enough to have seen a lot of the shows. I used to go to New York at least once a year and see all the shows. And it took me a while to adjust to some of the smaller scales. But then I discovered you guys many years ago, and it was like just being on Broadway.
Well, you know, I mean, we have, I mean, I think it's always exciting for me when our casts move into Khan Auditorium when we start tech, you know, because it's such a exciting time. It's like being on Broadway in a way. It's a big, like a big Broadway
it's
stage.
It's a Broadway stage, sure.
You know, and so you don't really have that experience in Chicago unless you're lucky enough to get into one of the, you know, national tours that's sitting down here or it's coming here, you know,
right,
Wicked
that's true.
Or something, Jersey Boys or something like that. So we're the only ones that are, you know, producing locally, casting locally, giving jobs to Chicago actors in these inner productions of this scale and scope.
So it's a heck of a training ground for those that are auditioning for these tours.
Actually, it's funny you say that because that's kind of what it feels to me sometimes. It's like a training ground. I feel that's what we're providing because of the combination of actors, you know, young kids, like I said, in college, and we have real kids in this show too. I mean, small kids, you know, and they're and they're getting a chance to work with like Larry Adams and Alicia Burnesh, you know, really. Really pros, you know. So it reminds me of like when I was a young kid doing summer stock with stars, you know. That was a training ground kind of situation.
Sure. You know. Well, let's go into a little bit of your history of Light Opera Works. I know the company started in 1980.
Yeah, 1981. Yeah.
Okay. And you've been involved with it now since 2005. Is that correct? I think that was your first year.
Okay, I'll believe you.
All right.
I'm not, like, keeping track, but well, I think that sounds...
Thank God for Google.
Yeah, right.
You know,
okay,
just Google your name and all this came up.
So this is the end of my fourth season. Okay. Yeah, and the first season I inherited. I mean, that season was already set as far as what those shows were and the directors and all that kind of stuff. So this is really the end of my third season that I would call mine, you know.
Well, some of the shows that I've seen you direct that I really liked, The Mikado was awesome. The Merry Widow.
Yeah, Merry Widow was...
I thought you guys made The Merry Widow work much better than other productions I've seen of it. I think the book was changed, wasn't it?
Yes, we actually wrote our own book on The Merry Widow, yeah. It's one of those shows where, you know, there's obviously it's originally written in German, so you have to get a... If you're going to do it in English, you have to get a translation, and there's like six translations available out there, and they're all a little different, you know.
Yeah, and none of them are too good, from what I've seen.
Well, pluses and minuses and stuff, so we kind of started over, you know.
Wasn't Jack Helbig involved?
Jack Helbig and Greg Opelka both.
And Greg Opelka, yeah. Two well-known people in Chicago.
Well-known
yeah.
people, right? Yeah, Jack did most of the book, and Greg did all the lyrics, and Yeah, so that was exciting. That was challenging, too.
And that's one that, again, not only I remember, everybody remembers. Mm-hmm. You kind of set the standard on that show with that translation and the way it worked.
Yeah, I think it's actually been, those guys have, you know, gotten a little more mileage out of it. I think somebody else has done that for them, some
good
company somewhere.
Good. Well, you set a nice standard.
Yeah.
I also liked Darling of the Day.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was pretty strong.
That was a challenging show. Again, that was one of those lost Broadway shows, musicals. And again, that was lined up before I got here, but we had a connection there and with people in New York that were rewriting it. And it was a big Broadway flop, and it was a huge show, and so they were trying to scale it down and looking for somebody to produce it so that other people would see it. It would get some notoriety, and maybe other theaters would pick it up because, you know, let's be honest, most theaters are looking for a new musical and they're looking for something small, you know, and we did that on our second stage, which is a smaller venue. So
I thought you made it work.
I thought it was a charm.
Did they come out and see it?
Well, the guy from New York that was doing most of the writing was here the whole time.
Okay. You know? That's good. That's another nice challenge to be able to work with the writers. I also liked the 110 in the Shade.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite shows.
Yeah. And that's one a lot of people didn't know how strong that show was. I had not seen it before.
Right. It's one of the, that's one of the shows most people don't know. I mean, I happen to know that show because the authors, Tom Jones and Harvey Schmidt, are actual friends of mine because I've worked with them in productions of The Fantastics. So I know them personally, and so it was a great kind of honor for me to do one of their shows.
And did they come and see it?
No, they couldn't come and see it because of... Harvey is not well, and Tom was too busy with something else. And Harvey's basically retired now in Texas, and Tom is still working on other projects. But
terrific!
But I had gone to Texas myself to see a production of it down at Theater Under the Stars. We're doing it, and this is before that Broadway revival that happened.
Yeah,
and Tom was there, so actually I was seeing it with Tom, and we had a chance to talk about it and stuff.
Were you involved though, when they did Grover's Corners?
No, I was not involved.
You were not involved with that one. Okay. Because I know they did that at Marriott, right?
Right, yeah. My partner Jim Harms was involved.
Oh, Jim was in it. I know Renee Matthews was in it.
Right.
And she was saying she got to know them, too.
Right, yeah.
I was looking at your history. And, folks, if you want to get a chance to work with this guy who's a triple threat, but what a background. You danced, Larry. We were the dance captain with Michael Bennett.
Of course,
Chorus Line. Tell us about that. Had to be a tremendous experience.
That was my first big, big Broadway type show. I was cast. I was a replacement in the L.A. company of that show. They auditioned in Chicago, and I got the job, and I went to L.A. and I did it out in L.A. and that was 74 was that 74 no that was no it was like 77 yeah and it was kind of the near the end of the LA run. There was about four or five of the original cast members still doing it, so it was I was very young. It was very exciting, you know, to be involved in something like that.
Well,
it was actually the first when I went to saw it was in rehearsal out in LA, and I went to see the show that night, and that was the first time I had ever seen a Broadway show.
The first time you've ever seen
one? Yeah, I'd never seen one, so.
Well, you picked it's one of my favorites. The production that you did, where you direct and you played Zach at Theater at the Center in 04. And I have seen Chorus Line many times, and I had a couple people with me who that was their favorite show. So they drove out, you know, to Munster.
Sure.
I go to Munster all the time because I like Bill Plincy's work. Yeah. But what you did with it was the best production of that show that any of us had seen.
Well,
had that emotional and how you cast people that could dance, and the girls have a lot of the big singing songs.
Sure, yeah.
And you cast girls that could dance because you had to because in that show, but they could all belt, they could all sing.
Yeah,
it was really amazing.
Yeah, that was really rewarding for me because I mean I love the show. It's one of my all time favorite shows, and I've been involved with I think like five different times. So that was the last time, and I kind of felt like for me, it might be would probably be the last time I'd be doing it too, you know.
Oh no, and, you got to do it again.
But I mean, and for me to grow up from being Larry the dance captain to now being an older person and playing Zach the director was very, that was like a full circle for me personally.
Yeah, but you danced in it too.
Oh yeah,
and you stayed
yeah.
with the kids.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah,
oh yeah. Come on, keep up, kids. Here we go.
Yeah,
but yeah, I was really proud of that production.
You must do that again. Because, again, every 5 years is a whole new generation coming up
well,
that don't know these shows and have never seen them.
I mean, it's obvious the popularity of it on Broadway recently. I think it's closed, though, hasn't it?
It did close, but it did all right.
It ran quite a while.
And considering it ran for, what, a zillion years in New York.
And there was all kinds of talk on that Broadway viral that they were going to update it and all that kind of stuff, but I think in the end they didn't.
From what I understand from, again, one of my friends who saw your production, saw that one. And by the way, she said it wasn't as good as the one I saw in Indiana. That's how she, you know. But she said it was pretty good. And they didn't change it. How could you change a show like that?
Right. That would be, I mean, that's really messy.
Write another show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah.
Some of the other things you toured in, Evita, what did you play in Evita?
That was the second time I was cast in a big company in Chicago, but that was the Chicago company of Evita in 1980.
Okay.
So that was the first time that a big Broadway show was making the point of origin Chicago. So when the Hal Prince office came to Chicago to do Evita.
Like Wicked is now a sit down or Jersey.
Exactly.
Board. Oh, that was the first, I didn't know that.
That was the first time.
Okay.
And to do that, you've got to cast, you know, there's a percentage of that show that's got to be cast for them to make that the point of origin. You've got to cast a certain number of equity actors, you know, and they never believed that they would be able to do that, you know, because, you know, it's
they new. Know now.
Yeah, they know now.
Maybe
yeah,
then right. they didn't know.
But we played Chicago 11 months and then we went on the road for about 2 years after that. So that was my first time touring with a big Broadway show. But it was a fantastic experience because we were playing cities for the first time. So they were all sit-down stays, you know, Toronto 3 months, Boston 6 months, Philadelphia 4 months.
Tell us what that experience is about. And do you recommend it for young actors? Because I think you don't get your ticket punched until you've done a tour.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and those are the best tours. When those are called, like, first nationals because you're playing the cities for the first time. And, I mean, that was a life-changing experience just professionally and financially because
it's a home run money wise too, isn't it?
So, you know, when that was over, I mean, you know, there was money in the bank.
How do you stay physically and mentally prepared to do whatever role you played in Evita or whatever, you know, you're playing X or whatever,
sure.
and you have to do it 8 times a week and you're doing it for 3 years?
Right.
How do you stay fresh and sharp?
Well, I suppose, you know, it depends, you know, what kind of person you are, what kind of work ethic you have, and it depends on what kind of the show it is. But like Evita, like Chorus Line, it was a really hard show. I mean, we never sat down for a minute. I mean, it's go, go, go. So when it's really busy like that, it's not really that. I mean, yeah, it's just hard work. It's hard work just to do it, just to get through it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So it would be different to tour with a show where you had like a little teeny part and you were sitting around backstage for hours and hours. That would be hard. You know,
so
but I've never had that experience.
In your mind, it's actually, you stay sharper, because other actors have told me that when you have a larger role. Mm.
Yeah, but, you know, I was doing ensemble in Evita, but the ensemble's huge and all kinds of, you know, you're changing clothes. And then over those 3 years, I moved up into other spots in the show and I was, you know, suddenly understudying one of the principals and then I was going on for that principal all the time. And
cool.
So there were things happening. It wasn't the same all the time.
You really recommend that young actors audition for these national tours? Even if they don't think they're ready for it, I mean, you just go for it. And you never know.
You never know. You know.
But yeah, I could see that would be what you learn about your craft and what you learn about yourself,
right?
The physical and mental preparation. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're exhausted by Sunday night.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of actors though that, you know, they have no interest in doing a long run. They want to, you know, personally, it was just about the work. I just want to do good work, and I don't have to do a different show every 6 months to be fulfilled. You know, or a different role. I'm not always thinking about what's the next job, what's the next show, what's the next role, what's my next career move. But some actors do, and that's fine. Some people work
that
like that.
It depends on their plan,
Right. It depends on their plan and where they're going.
Well, you also toured, and you got to tell us about The Fantastics, which, again, was one of my right up there with Chorus Line. I mean, that is one of the great shows.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, through other friends, other friends who knew Tom and Harvey heard about me. Tom and Harvey, they've got a personal assistant who's an actor also, who was in Evita with us for a while, a friend of mine, Dan Shaheen. So, you know, I got to know Dan Shaheen. Dan Shaheen wanted to introduce me to Tom and Harvey because they were getting ready to mount the 35th anniversary tour of the Fantastics, and that was going to be a big tour, and they enlarged the show. They added a chorus to the show. We did it with a full orchestra.
I've never seen it. I'd love to see it.
It starred Robert Goulet, and I came to New York and auditioned for The Mute, and they wanted The Mute in this production to be more of a dancing mute rather than just a mime or just an actor person. So I got hired to do that. So I got that job. So that was my first time working with Tom and Harvey, and they directed the tour.
How long were you in the tour?
The tour was supposed to be longer than it was. It was at least 6 months. It might have been eight, something like that.
Okay.
But Robert Goulet, that's when he got that movie, The Naked Gun. First one.
The first one, all right.
And,
yeah, you got to take the movie.
Yeah, so once we lost Robert, then... You know, that was kind of the end of the tour. But and I guess it got really, really close to being filmed for A&E. Really close.
It's too bad they didn't. Yeah. Because the film version was brutal. It was terrible.
Yeah.
It needs to really be done.
But this tour was exciting because we rehearsed in New York, and we went and saw the Fantastics in New York at the Little Sullivan Street Theater. But this was completely different because, like I said, they added a chorus to the show.
Wow!
And a full orchestra.
And a full orchestra.
You know, and bigger sets and bigger costumes.
So that begs a question because we're near the end of this interview. Mm-hmm. So when is Light Opera going to do that version of the Fantastic?
Well, I kind of mentioned it to Bridget. I think
that would be fabulous.
I don't know actually if the orchestrations are available. You know, I don't know what happened to that because it, you know.
There's orchestrators around. Doug Pecks of the world to work on it.
Exactly. But after doing that tour, then Tom and Harvey have also done the show in Japan. They've done it four times over there.
Wow.
Productions of the Fantastic, where they are the stars. Tom plays the old actor. He directs it. He plays the old actor. And Harvey plays piano.
So they do it in English?
They do it like the Sullivan Street version with just piano and harp, the way it's normally done. But they are the stars. Well, because I had worked with them on this big tour, then they asked me to do the Japan tour. So I went over with Japan and did a tour with them. So I was actually doing the show with them eight times a week, you know, as fellow actors.
That'll keep you sharp.
Yeah, and that was fantastic. I had never been to Japan. You know, we did 29 cities in 3 months, you know.
Wow.
So, I mean, they're just great gentlemen.
I hope you got to like sushi.
Yeah. Well, not as long as it's vegetable sushi, I was okay.
Okay. That's a show that would be perfect for you guys in one of the upcoming years because everybody knows the show, and I got to go see a full blast version of, you know, these great songs and this terrific story and the lyrics are fabulous.
Oh yeah, it's a terrific show.
In the interest of time here, we're getting near the end of this. Tell us your next season.
Our next season will begin our 2009 season. Okay. We'll start in June with Stephen Sondheim's A Little Night Music.
Oh, I love that.
Which is a beautiful show.
Yes.
That Light Opera Works did, but many years ago. I'm looking forward to, again, I was a stage manager on that show once, but so I'm looking
it's
forward.
A wonderful piece.
Yeah, wonderful piece.
And the music is so strong. I could just hear that.
Yeah, again, all beautiful music, all
legit
singing.
Chicago Shakespeare did a nice version of it a few years back with Kevin Goodall and so forth.
Right.
Barbara Robertson. But I could see you guys even moving it to another level.
Well, we'll see, and we hope so. And then our August show, like I said, will be My Fair Lady.
Okay, can't wait for that.
One of the great classics. We've been trying to get My Fair Lady for like the last 3 years, but the rights haven't been available because of that tour that finally played Chicago, you know, but the rights were tied up. So anyway, we're looking forward to that. And then our second stage in the fall, our smaller space, we were speaking of Greg Opelka earlier. We're going to be doing one of his shows. It's called C'est la vie. And
I've seen C'est La Vie with Greg. Yeah.
Yeah.
He used to play the piano in it when they did it at the theater building. Yeah.
That title
was
called La Vie en Oui.
Yeah, La Vie. Now C'est La Vie is...
Now he's retitled it. It's C'est La Vie, but it's the same show. And then at Christmas time next year, we're going to do our operetta, our Gilbert and Sullivan, and we'll be doing Pirates of Penzance again.
Great. Well.
So, which is a show it'd be my first Pirates with Light Opera Works. I've done the show myself. Again, smaller, in the round productions. So,
it's an exciting season coming up. And folks, if you want to see the stage musicals done the classic way, the way they were meant to be done, in the traditions, and like a time warp going back to, you know, the 50s, 60s, or 70s, get the Light Opera. I can't wait till the Light Opera Works here in Evanston. I can't wait to see Larry Adams in the Music Man.
Yeah, it'll just be great. You know, it's I love working on even these old classic musicals because, I mean, they really are great shows and they're great stories, but, you know, trying to make them fresh and trying to make them honest, you know, it takes a lot of creativity, and that's also what, you know, what we really regard them really highly as great pieces of theater.
Well,
in my book,
the production values of the shows you guys do is first class.
Thanks.
And most people do. So remember, folks, go see a play this week. Thank you.
Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of December 15th, 2008. Pegasus Players will kick off the new year with its 23rd annual Young Playwrights Festival, a professional production of selected one-act written by Chicago teenagers. It's an original Chicago tradition and the second oldest of its kind in the country. The Young Playwrights Festival celebrates over 20 years of giving voice to budding young playwrights within the city. Of the thousands of plays submitted, three winning plays were chosen to debut on the Pegasus stage. The three winning students each received $500, a full-scale production of their scripts, and a playwriting mentor to work with them during pre-production. The Young Playwrights Festival winners are Vincent Del Toro from Northside College Prep, Jihad Keperu from Whitney Young Magnet High School, and Raina Sun from Young Chicago Authors. The 23rd annual Young Playwrights Festival is presented by the Pegasus Players and will be held this January 8th through February 1st. Tickets are currently available. For more information and more detailed descriptions about each of the shows, click on over to theaterinchicago.com. This is your friendly reminder that the end of the holiday season is fast approaching, and the traditional Chicago holiday shows will soon be closing. Be sure to check out our special webpage dedicated to this year's holiday shows for your chance to receive discount tickets and other special offers. The page has detailed information about the shows, streaming video, audio interviews, the full cast list, and more. So click on over to the Theater in Chicago special holiday show page to get the most you can out of holiday theater in Chicago. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Rudy Hogan-Miller for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So,
Until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.